fits.
Thank you and good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Andrew Fitz from the Washington State Attorney General's Office on behalf of all petitioners today. Your Honors, we will never have a nuclear waste repository at Yucca Mountain or elsewhere if the process Congress mandates in law is not followed by the executive. But that's what's happened here. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission, taking its lead from the administration, has abandoned all work on the Yucca Mountain license application and it's missed its three-year deadline for issuing a decision on it. The NRC concedes that it has duties under the NWPA to consider the Yucca Mountain application and issue a final decision within 3 years. Mandamus should issue in this case because, number one, the NRC has unreasonably delayed complying with these duties, and number two, mandamus is proper under the circumstances of the case. Your Honors, first, there is no reasonable basis for the NRC's noncompliance with its duties. As a factual matter, it was the administration's policy shift and nothing that Congress did that precipitated the NRC's shutdown. When it began its shutdown, the NRC was funded at a $29 million level. It was moving forward at this level, and it makes no representation that it could not move forward at that level. In the NRC's own words, the shutdown began, quote, in accordance with the Commission's decisions on the FY 2011 budget. Well, those Commission decisions were premised on a budget request, which began with the words, the administration has indicated that it does not support developing a repository at Yucca Mountain. Congress had nothing to do with it. To the contrary, Congress had given the NRC a mandate. Congress had given the NRC funding. It was the NRC's decision to shut down. And under those circumstances, it was unreasonable for the NRC to abandon its duties. The NRC shut down its process, pointing to a budget presumption that the Department of Energy was going to withdraw from its proceeding, from the very proceeding from which the NRC's board had already denied DOE's withdrawal. This incongruity cannot be squared, and this incongruity traces directly to the NRC chairman. The chairman knew that DOE's withdrawal had been denied. It was law of the case at that point. He knew that he did not have the votes on the commission to overturn that denial of withdrawal. But the chairman held off on allowing the commission's vote to become final. At the same time, he himself initiated the shutdown and defended the shutdown based on DOE's decision, which had been rejected, not to proceed. The agency chose to abdicate its duty. Your Honors, the NRC cannot now justify its shutdown activities as reasonable defensive steps anticipating limited funding. First, we are not aware of a single case in which a court has held that an agency can ignore mandatory duties simply because it thinks it might not get enough money in the future. Under this circuit's case law, in the City of Los Angeles v. Adams case and Rama Navajo, the agency's obligation is to move forward with its mandates as best it can with the available funds in the anticipation of future full funding.
Well, both of those cases were grants cases, right?
That's correct.
So it was very easy to order a pro rata distribution of the grant money. In this, right.
I would agree.
So in this case is somewhat different. This case you're actually asking for procedures and then some kind of decision from the agency, right? So you said that the agency has shut down this project, that they closed down the licensing support network, that they transferred or donated infrastructure. That's all from your brief, right?
Correct.
So what's the current status? I understand your argument about what they did in the past. But we still the purpose of mandamus is to decide what they should do in the future. So what's the status of the infrastructure to make the kind of decisions and to go forward now at the agency?
Your Honor, I don't have direct knowledge of the status of their infrastructure, and I believe that under the United Mine Workers case, the burden to show that they don't have the infrastructure or ability to move forward would be on the NRC.
Well, in United Mine Workers, we specifically said that just because a agency has failed, even in a clear duty, the court still retains discretion to decide whether to issue mandamus, right?
I think that there is some reason to look at the Forest Guardians case.
Different circuit.
I acknowledge that, Your Honor.
Right.
Thank you.
And we have three cases in our circuit which go exactly in the opposite direction, right? That's right, isn't it?
I would agree with that.
Yeah. So I guess my question is, assume for the purpose of this discussion, just for the moment, they only have the $10 million that you've described as any-year funds, or that they've described as any-year funds. We don't have any idea what they can do with that, I take it, right?
They've provided no indication to this court. And that's correct.
Nobody has provided. Neither side has provided.
That's correct.
Okay. But as far as you know, your description is they basically shut the whole thing down, right? They got rid of the people. They got rid of the infrastructure. They got rid of the computer network. When you say they got rid of the computer network, what does that mean? Do you just have to turn it back on, or is it in boxes somewhere?
Honor, as I understood, first I want to provide a direct answer to the original question.
Thank you. Yeah.
At a minimum, right now today, I think it's reasonable to expect that if we assume for the sake of argument they have $10 million available, mm-hmm. and not conceding that, they could move forward to complete the safety evaluation reports, which are the underpinning of the NRC's consideration of the application, and the parties in the adjudicated proceeding could move forward with discovery at their own expense and advance the ball that way, with very little funds for the NRC to expend.
Well, DOE is a party to the adjudicated proceeding, right?
Correct.
And they were zeroed out, specifically zeroed out, right?
But there was no evidence provided to this court as to what carryover funds, any year carryover funds, may be available to the Department of Energy. The only representation made was that the Department of Energy doesn't have the funds to see the proceeding through to its completion, and I think that's an important distinction.
But so you don't know either whether they're...
That's correct.
I see.
And Your Honor, I would posit that that's a matter for another day if, after mandamus is issued, there's an inability to comply with the mandamus. I think that that's an appropriate consideration if there were a contempt proceeding.
Why isn't that... Well, I mean, now there's an old adage, which we've said in several of our own cases, that mandamus will not issue to do a useless thing. And we need to know before we issue mandamus whether this will be useful or useless, not after.
Your Honor, I would submit to the court that if the only thing the NRC could do with the funds available is to issue those safety evaluation reports with the agency's conclusions as to whether the Department of Energy's application fits the regulatory criteria that the NRC has promulgated, that would be a significant advancement in this proceeding, and it would materially advance our country's knowledge as to whether a repository can be licensed at Yucca Mountain. Your Honor, I'm happy to address the LSN question if you'd like, or I can also move on. My understanding is this, that the Licensing Support Network was a central database for all information related to the adjudication. Now, what the NRC and the board specifically has provided is that each party was to retain the information that it had provided to the LSN. That information has been provided to the NRC. I don't know at this point how feasible it is to reconstruct the licensing support network, but the NRC has all the information that was contained in the network. So I believe that the information is still there for the parties to proceed with the adjudication.
And what's the nature of your argument that they have more than $10 million to spend?
Your Honor, we agree with the NRC that nuclear waste fund monies can only be spent on Yucca Mountain activities, but we maintain that the opposite, the inverse, is not true, that unless there's a specific appropriation that would direct the NRC to use funds for a specific purpose, the general appropriated funds are available unless there has been a denial of funds or a restriction of funds placed by Congress.
But GAO usually says when there's a specific funding scheme for one purpose, you can't, and that's exhausted, you can't then dip into the general appropriations to supplement that. It's a longstanding GAO principle.
Your Honors, I think the best way for me to leave it is this. that the NRC's duty is to comply with the law.
Right. That didn't hurt you on the $10 million. I'm just saying, to get more than $10 million, I think you have to tangle with this GAO principle, which is admittedly this tradition and not written in the statute.
Not really in the statute, I agree. Your Honors, the NRC's actions
Do
were not...
Do you have any explanation about why the Department of Energy is not participating in this case?
Your Honor, we directed our petition specifically to the NRC. At this point,
no,
based
but the,
on...
But the Department of Energy could have intervened. The Department of Justice could have filed an amicus brief giving the views of the administration on all this. But what we got instead was complete silence.
I don't have any basis to speculate as to why the Department of Energy may not have taken those actions. Your Honors, the NRC's actions were not those of an agency taking reasonable defensive steps to prepare for a potential shortfall. In the worst case, the NRC was not looking at a situation where it would have no funds available going forward. In the worst case, it could have eked by under, as we spoke about, the doctrine in the City of Los Angeles and Rama Navajo. And Judge Garland, while I recognize that those are disbursement cases, if you will, I think the legal principle that the agency is obliged to follow its mandates as closely as it can is still appropriate to draw from those cases. That's what the NRC's own appropriation guidance tells the agency to do. It's supposed to redirect available funds, forestall an interruption in activity as long as possible, and only shut down when available funds have been exhausted. And if the NRC was worried about a situation in which it wouldn't have sufficient funds, it could have triggered the extra year that it could have triggered under the statute, and it didn't. But the NRC acted here as if its program had been terminated. And remember, this is an orderly closure, not an orderly suspension.
But isn't the writing on the wall?
I would disagree with that, Your Honor.
$10 million will be exhausted and looks realistically like that's it.
Well, I would not concede that that's realistically what it looks like. There has been a single instance where Congress has failed to appropriate funds to the NRC for Yucca Mountain activities. And that single instance came after, 3 months after, the orderly shutdown was already completed, when the agency was undertaking no activity, and when the agency still had unspent funds left on the table. And this action was before the courts.
That still goes to the question of what we should do in the future. I mean, you may well be right or you may be wrong, but does it matter whether you're right or wrong as to whether they, NRC, misbehaved at that moment? The question still for us is what to do in the future, and if they went from zero for DOE and 10 for NRC and then in fiscal year 12 to zero for both, doesn't that suggest that maybe what we should do here is wait until there's some indication from the appropriators that they're willing to give enough money to make this a possible set of actions towards a decision? And you could come back here if you're right. That is, if it turns out that this is, you know, just the bottom, and in fact next year it's going to be huge amounts of money, then or amount of money that suggests, you know, even conceivable that a decision could be reached in 3 years, you could come back then if they refuse to spend the money and ask for mandamus then. I understand your argument about what happened in the past, but as I said before, we have to look at what we can do now.
So, Your Honor, when the two Aiken cases began, we were in a situation where we had a functioning proceeding. The proceeding is no longer functioning now as a result of the NRC's actions and the Department of Energy's actions. Congress began the process with mandates to both agencies and funding to both agencies. I don't think it's reasonable to expect Congress to fix this problem. Congress has already given the mandate. Congress has already given money in the past. The last point. Mm-hmm. The Nuclear Waste Policy Act specifically provides for direct judicial review by this court to review decisions not made, actions not taken by the NRC. It's a very unique provision.
Still, it's a jurisdictional provision, and we still have to have a cause of action, and that's the same cause of action we always deal with. It's either mandamus or the APA or some kind of meshing of the two. And so this is not, it is unique that they gave us, this court, exclusive jurisdiction a certain way, but we have a lot of cases where there's mandamus, and I don't know whether I'm stealing the idea that Judge Kavanaugh was about to ask, but there are a lot of statutes that say that agencies have to act within a certain amount of time. As you saw in Barr, there was, you know, there's quite a number of FDA statutes in that regard. The Health Reform Act that was passed has dozens of requirements that the agency has to issue programs within X amount of time, and some of those, that time is up. So if Congress were to cut the funds, would we ignore, I mean, say after the next election, there's a new Congress and it appropriates less funds, but doesn't have enough votes to overturn the statute, either the FDA statute or the Affordable Care statute or any of the other ones that have these kind of limits, we should be issuing mandamus in all of those under this theory, because the agency has a clear duty to act within a certain amount of time and hasn't done it. How do we draw a line that doesn't put us in the business of ordering the agencies to do things that Congress hasn't given them the money to do?
Well, again, I understand that you're looking at the situation now, and I keep wanting to go back. Right. But the fact remains that when the agency made its own bed, it decided to shut down, not based on anything Congress had done, but through its own actions. Now, Congress, I believe, is waiting for this court to rule. This court may look to Congress, but Congress has already done its part.
Well, that leads into my question, which is, suppose we rule for you in this case and issue the mandamus, and then Congress zeroes out the funding. That would be an absolute defense in a contempt proceeding, correct?
I believe it would be a reasonable argument for them to maintain. I'd want to see the circumstances at the time, but
not an absolute.
Let me concede this.
Yeah.
If they were given zero funding and had exhausted all carryover funds, I think that then, under the track analysis, they would have a reasonable basis to forestall following this court's mandamus until such time as they receive funds in the future.
Who gets held in contempt in your scenario?
Well, in this case, we've named as respondents both the NRC chairman and the agency itself.
So what's it mean to hold the agency in contempt? How does the court enforce that? Put aside the individual.
Your Honor, I've actually been asking myself that question in a number of contexts. I think ultimately, within our system of separated powers, at some point the agency has to respect the authority of the court.
Yeah, but how do you enforce it? Maybe you issue an injunction and hold the and the agency doesn't comply. Then what do you do?
Well, first, I think the court would...
We've run into this question over the years in a number of different ways. The EPA originally issued orders against states to have states conduct inspection and maintenance of vehicles with catalytic converters on it, and they suddenly realized that they had no means of enforcing that. And so what happened, the case went up to the Supreme Court, by the way, and the Supreme Court, for one reason or another, didn't decide it. But I know the case because I argued it. But what happened is that EPA then backed off in terms, and everything began being tied to grants and aid, you know, federal highway funds, this, that, and the other thing. What you do, you enforce it by cutting off the money. But I don't see, that option's not available here. So again, holding the NRC in contempt. And let me ask you another thing, too. Is there any indication that a majority of the NRC is responsible for anything that happened in the past?
I think in this circumstance, from all the indications in the Inspector General report, which has not been countered in any way by the NRC in this case, it looks like a lot of the actions undertaken on behalf of the commission were undertaken by the chairman.
By the chairman. And so if the agency itself, if a majority of the agency is not responsible, did not take the actions that lead up to this mandamus, how is it that we have the authority under traditional mandamus law to hold the agency in contempt?
Well,
The chairman is another matter entirely. Yeah.
At the bottom line in this case, and we're not asking for, obviously, contempt at this point, where we find ourselves, Your Honor, is
To issue an injunction, a mandamus, for a clear violation of duty when the agency is not responsible for that. It's really the action of the chairman.
But the result for us as the people intended to be benefited from this statute is that we have been deprived of a process that Congress put into place in a unique statute with the no competing priority that's been identified before the agency, where no action is being undertaken. Whether it was the chairman or whether it was the agency, the effect doesn't matter. The effect is the same for us, in that we do not have a process to get to an answer as to whether we can have a repository at Yucca Mountain when the statute directs the agency to answer that very question. And if the court does not enforce the statute in this instance, based on, quite frankly, a political decision to not move forward by the executive, then we will never have a statutory process to get to an answer with this particularly nettlesome issue.
But to pick up on Judge Randolph's question and your mention of the separation of powers, it is difficult for a court to force the executive branch to take affirmative acts as opposed to prohibiting the executive branch from doing forbidden acts. And that's what you're asking in this case. And maybe you're right, and just we should face that in a contempt proceeding down the road that hopefully would never come to pass. But the overall system we have makes it difficult to force the executive to do something.
I would agree with Your Honor. I hope we don't find ourselves in that situation down the road. But to go back, and this is addressing your comments about the Barr case, The Nuclear Waste Policy Act is a unique statute. And if you look in the legislative history, which is included in our addendum, it specifically recognized that judicial review is an essential element of the statute to keep the process on track. Congress fully recognized that this is the ultimate not-in-my-backyard issue. It devised a statute after already 30 years of inaction to try to get a process moving forward. Your Honor, a little over a year ago.
Can you tell me how much money is in that waste fund? No.
I believe at this point, and I may be incorrect on this, I believe it's on the order of $29 billion. No. Is that correct? $1 billion.
$29 billion.
That's great. We got a lifeline back there.
and the only thing that money can be used for is
this process.
Is this process. So there's $29 billion sitting out there. And is there any provision regarding what happens to that money if there is no waste or depository process?
I'm not aware that there is, and I do know that there is other litigation presently before this court addressing the issue of whether the Department of Energy can continue to collect to that fund.
But isn't that telling us something, that if there's $29 billion that was collected for the purpose of this process, but Congress has given zero of it to DOE and zero of it again to NRC, that Congress is telling us something here? It's not just the administration that's responsible. Congress is telling us something. They could have said, take as much as you need to do what we told you to do. And instead they said, take zero.
The most important thing at the end of the day is that Congress has never changed the underlying law. The mandates remain the same.
I understand.
And those mandates are to benefit us. And that's why we're before this court.
I understand that, but Congress often acts, you know, they have more than one power. They have an authorization power and they have appropriations power. And for people who have been in the executive branch, they're well aware of the power of the purse and the ability of Congress to say, well, sorry, that office in the Justice Department is closing tomorrow. Or you can't bring those cases, not because the law doesn't allow it, but because, you know, we're not allowing any amount of money to be spent on that subject. This isn't really new or surprising that Congress would act in this way, is it?
It may be that the flavor of Congress and the interest of Congress in funding this project is going to wax and wane from year to year. But if the court allows the executive to make the unilateral decision that it's simply not going to move forward with the project, and we are not allowed recourse to be able to challenge the executive and hold the executive to the substantive law, then I don't know how to explain that to my children.
There is a way. You go to Congress and you get them to appropriate $29 billion or at least $50 million.
And that's fine as long as this court has made clear that the mandate remains a mandate for the federal government to follow. That it can't simply ignore it.
The answer is that there's a way of changing the law, not to completely defy it in the manner that this record indicates happened. And the way to change it is go get Congress to amend the statute and get rid of the three-year deadline and the requirement that you consider only yucca if that's a problem.
I would submit that if the executive doesn't like those provisions of the law, that's the executive's duty to go get the law changed.
Right.
I agree with you there. That's why we're here today.
We'll let you. I know we've eaten up all of your rebuttal time, but this case looks pretty important, so we'll let you have some time at the end.
Thank you.
Now we're going to hear from Mr. Mullins from the NRC.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Charles Mullins for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. I will speak for 15 minutes, and Mr. Mullins will speak for 5. This case is the
gotta
most...
Get ready to talk for more than 15.
Having seen my colleague up here, I suspected that might be the case.
Do you have independent litigating authority? I'm just curious.
We believe we do. The Justice Department is aware of the case. Has chosen not to intervene.
Is that independent litigating authority in the Supreme Court, too? I don't think so, right?
Your Honor, I have no idea. I wouldn't go there.
That's, to the court?
Well, if we have a case that goes to the court, I'm assuming somebody at a higher pay grade would argue with it, but that's that obviously I have not researched that. I have no idea.
The reason I ask is that I looked at a number of cases in which the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has appeared in this court and several others, including the Supreme Court, and the Department of Justice was in each one was listed as representing the agency along with the agency itself, I mean the General Counsel. And I thought that was the customary mode, and then suddenly we get this and you're alone. So,
most of the cases are under the Hobbs Act. And under the Hobbs Act, the United States is a separate statutory party.
Yeah.
And so we have independent litigating authority, but the Justice Department usually reviews the brief, concurs in the brief, and signs on. In this case, the Justice Department didn't, we communicated with the Justice Department, but the Justice Department indicated no interest in becoming involved in the case. We proceeded, assuming on the
assumption. Is that the same reason you don't want to appear before the Supreme Court?
I have no idea, Your Honor. You'd have to ask the Justice Department that.
Now, you're representing not only the chairman, but according to...
I represent the agency writ large, and the chairman in his official capacity.
Mm-hmm. Are there internal procedures in the agency for determining what litigating positions? I'm not asking any attorney-client question. I'm just saying... Are there any internal procedures where the agency itself that votes on litigating positions?
Not that I'm aware of.
Is that entirely up to the chairman then?
No. This litigation has been handled by the solicitor and myself and the Office of General Counsel. We defend the agency's position.
Same way the NLRB proceeds, or?
That's correct. In other words, we stand for the agency's interest. The agency was sued in name.
Yeah, I'm just looking for where I get the agency's position apart from your brief. Where is there a vote? Where is there a statement by the agency as opposed to the chairman? Where does that policy come from that you're representing now?
Well, first of all, you have the commission decision on September 9th last year, where the commission, A, announced it was split 2-2 on whether or not to reverse the licensing board's decision, and B, the...
But then under agency rules, it's affirmed, right?
Under the agency rules, it remains the law of the case. It wasn't the final decision. Had it been at the end of the proceeding, in other words, had the licensing board dismissed the contentions, authorized the staff to issue the license, and the commission split 2-2, then that decision would have been affirmed and the license would have issued.
Yeah, but what that
this
means
is... This is an interlocutory decision, so... It's not quote affirmed, but it remains, it stands.
So that tells us that we don't have an agency position. It's 2-2.
Well, it is officially, the agency position is DOE cannot withdraw its application.
Right.
Second, the commission unanimously.
What's the consequence of that? If they can't withdraw the petition, then doesn't it follow that the board has to consider it? Isn't that the agency's position?
That's correct. And the board was considering it and holding proceedings during the pendency of the review and by the commission.
No, it's just shut it down.
I'm sorry?
It's been shut down, right?
It's been shut down now.
Right, despite a legal mandate to consider.
But from the, I'm talking about.
I'm trying to figure out how the agency can justify ignoring the statutory mandate.
Let me finish this question and then can I come back?
Yes. No, I thought they were related.
Judge Kavanaugh.
All right. The commission, when the Department of Energy moved to withdraw, the licensing board suspended other proceedings while it considered that motion. The licensing board in June of 2010 ruled that DOE could not withdraw. Mm-hmm. At that point, proceedings then recommenced before the licensing board. Mm-hmm. And proceedings can, while the commission took review of the matter to look at it, proceedings still continued. Mm-hmm. The licensing board still issued decisions. Discovery was available to the parties. And so the license, in other words, discovery was not shut down until May of 2011 when the licensing board granted a protective order request from the Department of Energy.
Wait, wasn't there a order of the NRC September 9th of 2011, which wasn't, and that was a decision of the board, correct?
No, the
September commission.
9th
of the,
was December, was decision of the commission.
Of the commission.
Of the commission.
It's, and it or and it said, we exercise our inherent supervisory authority to direct the board by the close of the current year to complete all necessary and appropriate case management, including disposal of all matters currently pending.
That's correct. And that was a unanimous decision by all four commissioners participating.
So is that, that's the position of the board? That's where
a, that
you get
is
the position
the
of the board, I take
commission.
It?
Commission.
I mean, not the, I'm sorry, that's where you get the position of the commission.
That's correct. In other words, the commission unanimously said, and if you'll notice also in the part in the opinion there, it says based on budgetary considerations.
Yes.
But what's going on now is that there was a three-year deadline in order to make a decision on the license application, which has come and gone.
That's correct.
And the commission, at least you're representing, has no intent of reaching a resolution on that decision and thereby, I'll use a loaded term, disregarding the statutory mandate.
Well, again, as I, the commission unanimously looked at the situation and said, we don't have funds to continue. I believe Judge Garland's.
That's just false. You have the $10 million. Till that's gone, you have. Don't you have the $10
million? We do have. Well, it's a little bit more. It's about 10.4 now. We
okay,
were closing out some accounts.
Let me just make sure I have this established.
Correct.
Do you have the $10.4 million to use on this project?
We do.
Okay.
So
until you use it up, I don't understand how you can say, we're not going to continue. We're just going to ignore the congressional mandate. Usually when agencies ignore congressional mandates, it's either because they've come up with a creative legal interpretation or because they say that there's something unconstitutional going on here. It's just, we don't like it. We don't like it as a matter of policy. Well, that's not a good enough reason to ignore a statutory mandate, as I understand it.
I would agree, and the commission is not saying that. The commission is saying, in effect.
Then why isn't it spending the money to continue compliance with what Congress has directed it to do?
To use a phrase from the vernacular, the commission did not feel that it would be appropriate to throw good money after bad. In other words, at this point, there does not appear
to be. How do they know what's going to happen for fiscal year 13? How does anyone know?
Well, the decision was made in 2011.
Right.
And so at that point, the commission had only the $10 million left. DOE had been zeroed out.
I know, but the whole theory of your position, as I understand it, is, well, let's not waste another $10 million because we're not going to have any funding come October 1st, right?
To some extent, that's...
And how do you know that?
Well, quite that far, but essentially, yes, Your Honor.
And how do you know that?
Given the approach, in other words, we have to
just political prognostication?
Well, if you look at what In other words, we have to go through OMB to get a budget.
I understand.
And so the administration controls our budget. And right.
No, they control the budget proposal.
So they control the budget proposal.
They don't control
Congress
the appropriations.
So far has not appropriated money for the last several years for
I don't understand what relevance there is to what the president requested in his budget. I mean, your brief is full of that, and then you compare what Congress appropriated. But the president's budget for the last several years hasn't gotten a single vote. So why do we care what the president's proposing?
Because Congress, in reaction to the proposed budget, has severely limited and then zeroed out both DOE and ourselves. Said we have $10 million, DOE has very little money. The question was asked, what does DOE have in carryover? I'm informed that as of this month, DOE has 17 points.
I don't understand why it matters what the president proposed.
It mattered to because...
But what matters is what Congress appropriated.
And Congress appropriated what the president proposed.
Not always, not in all these years.
No, but in the last couple of years for Yucca Mountain it has.
But there's still money left over, and Congress is presumably aware of that.
Correct.
Right? And no one knows what's going to happen come October 1st, or presumably there'll be a CR, you know, sometime after January. There'll be a new appropriation, right?
Well, I can't predict what Congress will do with the appropriation.
Well, your whole theory is based on predicting let me stop you. Your whole theory is based on predicting, is based on predicting that Congress will do zero. And I just don't know how we could sit here and say, yes, an agency can ignore the law because it's unlikely that Congress will appropriate money in the future, even though the agency has money now to continue complying with the law. And what kind of theory is that?
Your Honor, I guess if another term, it's reality. We are looking at
It asks us to bless. I don't know any precedent for this. You tell me if you can cite a case. The idea that an agency can ignore the law, again, not for constitutional reasons and not based on any statutory interpretation, just on this theory that the money will run out in the future. Well, are you aware of any case that says anything like that?
The city of Vernon is close to that. The city of Vernon, which we cite in our brief, is close. And that was where the Corps of Engineers had started building a dam. It ran out of money. Congress did not appropriate money for
that. It ran out of money. That hasn't happened.
In this case, the agency does not have money to continue the proceeding in a meaningful manner.
Lots of big projects that agencies undertake, there's not enough money at the outset to get to the completion. But that we have annual appropriations under the Constitution, and that's how it works, and you expect, and they have five-year cycles and proposals, of course, as you're well aware.
Yes, sir.
So agencies can plan on a more long-term basis. But you don't have the money in hand. But that doesn't mean you can just disregard all your statutory mandates on the idea, well, we may not get it next year.
No, but again, if you're looking at the situation in this case, the Department of Energy had said it was not... It did not wish to pursue the matter. It did not have funds to proceed. Remember, in this case, this is an effective trial between Nevada and DOE.
Would have been a reason for the commission to grant DOE's request to withdraw the license application, but that didn't happen. And obviously, I've expressed my view on that whole point last time around, but we are where we are with the system we have, and the system we have gives the NRC the final power here.
Again, Your Honor, there are, we could expend the $10 million. That could be done. Mm-hmm. But at that point, then we're right back where we are here again.
That assumes Congress will zero it out. You may be right, you may be wrong, and this may be an unfortunate system, but I just don't know, how can a court get behind a holding? We hold that the agency can ignore the statute because it may not get funds in the future. I mean, the implications of that holding, going back to some of Judge Garland's hypotheticals, are pretty extraordinary.
Your Honor, again, the question, I guess to some extent, is what would that remedy? In other words, the court can order us, for example, to complete the safety evaluation reports. My understanding is that can be done with the money in hand. The question is, what would that redress? In other words, which leads, of course, into the standing argument.
Right. Now, and I understand you're focused on this case, and this case,
this issue has many decades to go, probably, but I'm worried about the implications for other agencies and the implication of the court saying what you want us to say and how that could be used to upset what other agencies, upset the balance of power, essentially.
Again, Your Honor, there is, the commission can make some progress, but it would advance the ball maybe 3, 4, 5 yards down the field.
Well, you're resting not on the clear duty. You're resting on the discretionary authority of the court after there's a clear duty. We've said, as I think my colloquy with your opposing counsel suggests, that even where there is a clear duty, even where the agency has violated the clear duty, the court has to make a discretionary decision as to whether to issue mandamus. And there the normal equitable considerations come into play, including the question of whether any value is served or whether we're taking the $10 million and lighting it on fire. And that's really the question before us here. Now, you say that you don't think that the budget is going to be provided. And you point for that purpose to the fact that it hasn't been provided in the last 2 years.
I point to the commission's decision in the September 9th decision, which was based on funds in hand and the appropriation submit or the budget submitted by the president, the intent, the advice that it would only get $10 million, and that was for closeout. In other words, if you go back and look, the commission
asked for
more money.
But my colleagues have correctly pointed out that the president isn't the final arbiter of how much money you get. But it turned out you were right, that you got zero. Is that right?
Well, we got 10 for last, for...
No, but for fiscal year 12, you got zero.
Fiscal year 12, you got zero.
Right. And my understanding is that the Senate's current appropriation committee, again, has not recommended any money at all.
The current appropriation committees held hearings last week, I believe. Uh-huh. Markups.
But that's not going to be final. So there's going to be a CR.
I'm just responding
on your committee point. That's, you know, we're a long way from the goal line on what the 2013 appropriations are going to look like, and what one committee says is unlikely to happen. There's going to be an intervening election, almost certainly. So. Before the final approach.
So maybe the question is, who does have the burden here of showing the likelihood that this will be useful? That is, you're asked, how can we rely on the fact that you say there might not be money? I guess the question could be put exactly the same way to opposing counsel, which is, why is it enough that there might be enough money? Might not, neither of those words sounds like mandamus words.
Your Honor, I think your point earlier is the fair one. Is there a meaningful reason to make us go forward and spend the $10 million?
How about a court order?
Obviously.
Would that be a meaningful reason?
That would be meaningful, Your Honor. The agency will follow.
I'm not saying that facetiously, because counsel for the petitioners here has said that Congress is waiting to see what this court does. Do you agree with that? Because if we order mandamus, then and all we're doing is enforcing a mandate that Congress itself issued, then why should we suppose that Congress won't honor that and take a few drops out of that $29 billion waste fund that is accumulating?
Your Honor, you're asking me to read Congress's mind, and I would not attempt to do that.
Right. That's exactly what I'm asking, because that's your defense.
Well, no, not as our defense is that we took actions at the time that in the totality of the circumstances were reasonable. Given the limited funds that we had and the limited appropriation we expected, we took the reasonable step. We were good servants of the public fisc. In other words, conserve the waste fund for a time whenever there might be a proceeding when Congress would fund the proceeding. But we are limited to funds under the Nuclear Waste Fund. With all due respect to my colleague here, use of general appropriations funds is simply not available. If you look at the Nuclear Waste Policy Act, when it established a Nuclear Waste Fund, it said the purpose of that was so that the construction of Yucca Mountain and any repository would be borne by those people who owned the waste or who generated the spent fuel. So having us use general appropriations funds would be contrary to the Nuclear Waste Policy Act. Moreover, as Judge Kavanaugh pointed out, that would be contrary to basic appropriations law.
Well, part of this is what our baseline is for how we look at this in the mandamus proceeding, it seems to me, because the baseline I've been positing and questioning you is the baseline that the agency has to comply with the law, the mandate. I don't mean that sanctimoniously. I'm just saying that's the baseline. And then the defense to that that I've been thinking about is that you've posited is we don't have the money, and that's an absolute defense. But my problem with that is, A, you do have $10 million, and B, you're basing 2013 and beyond on a prognostication about Congress that you've said, I think, multiple times in response to Judge Randolph, you don't know what Congress is going to do. And so how can we, if the baseline is comply with the law, unless you have no money, how can we assume that you'll have no money in 2013?
Again, Your Honor, we're looking at this as can we do something in a meaningful fashion?
Right, and on that, your assumption, your statement, we can't do something in a meaningful fashion.
That's correct.
Okay. If we knew the $10 million was going to run out and that was it forever, that'd be a tougher case. But your position is the $10 million, but the reality is the $10 million will be used, and there may and likely would be future appropriations, or at least maybe future appropriations. And you can't guarantee that there won't be.
I can't guarantee there won't be.
Right.
But as I pointed
out
earlier,
since you can't guarantee there won't be, isn't the safer course for a court to say, comply with the law?
Again, I would go back to Judge Garland's position, or the question, the comment that he made, was it how meaningful would it be to advance the ball 3 yards down the field? We would argue
you're assuming, you know, we're going around and around, but you're assuming it'll stop 3 yards from now. If I knew 3 yards is it, okay, that's a different case. But I don't know that. I don't know what Congress is going to do. There's going to be a CR, and then there's going to be a big appropriation showdown, and then there's going to be an election before that, right? And then Yucca will probably be an issue for 2014 FY. Next summer, a year from now, when they're debating over that, right? But, I mean, in 2015, and probably on for a long time.
But even if we spend the money, as I made a comment a minute ago, it's not clear that that would redress the problem or redress the petitioner's injuries, which gets into the standing argument
before
we have in our brief.
I think we'll take the standing on the, unless my colleagues want to hear it, we'll take that on the briefs. But I'm interested in this other question, which I started asking opposing counsel, which is their brief said, and I think it seems quite obviously right, that you closed the whole thing down. Is that right?
As we say in our brief, we point out what the actions that were taken. The staff reviews, the safety evaluation reports were converted, but the license.
I got that. With respect to the bodies and the resources, you got rid of the computers and you gave them to some schools. You got rid of the buildings and you gave them to other places. You got rid of the people. Is that all?
We reassigned the people. We didn't fire them.
You reassigned them to tasks for which they have other funding for another purpose. Is that right?
That's correct.
And I take it that some amount of money was spent in order to preserve the records and everything else so that it could be brought back up again if there was funding. Is that right or wrong?
Commission decision, I believe, in November of 2011 that discusses what happens with the documents. The license, the staff documents, and some of the DOE documents are on the Commission's ADAMS system. A number of the rest of the documents are not. I believe they are physically hard copies, both hard copy and disk, at the NRC. They are not on an electronic system. You ask about the LSN system. I've seen a initial staff estimate which says to reestablish the LSN system would take an upfront payment of $5 million and would cost approximately $1 million additional dollars for the first year, and it would take 1 to 2 years to reestablish.
And you need that in order to do anything?
You need that to, in other words, the commission established the LSN system in order to try to meet the 3 or 4 year deadline. Remember, you're dealing with a case here where you've got several thousand.
Just to be clear, of the $10 million, it's going to take $5 million plus $1 million, $6 million just to get the system back up.
That's correct.
And I take it you have to hire some people, or?
That would be included in the extra $1 million.
That's for operating that system, but what about for the staff and the experts needed to?
We would have to reassign people. In other words, assuming for a moment, just take the staff the safety evaluation reports. They would have to be reassigned from their current projects, which would take some time, but could be done.
How many people are necessary to do those projects, and how much do they cost?
I had asked that question a couple of weeks ago. I was told that it could be done, but I haven't yet received a number of on the FTE or the budget. If the court asks, I can.
Petitioners said that that the proposal for FY 2011 was $10 million for 32 full-time positions. It's at page 13 of the brief. I don't know whether this is transferable or not transferable, but it's the only numbers that I can look at.
I believe that that was what we, asked Congress or asked for the OMB? No.
That was to support work related to the orderly closure.
$10 million, yeah, that sounds correct.
And in FY 2010, it asked for $23 million for 83 full-time positions.
That's correct.
Do you have any idea how many full-time positions it would take to do any of this work?
No, I have asked that, and I have not yet received an answer.
So it's possible that just to staff up, just to reconstitute the computer system, just to rehire or at least start paying the bodies, just to open up the to release buildings will cost more than the $10 million?
Yes. In other words,
if you did that, would you have to close it down again in order to protect all the stuff?
Yes. In other words, we would.
So you wouldn't be able to spend the full amount necessary to get everything out of storage. You could only spend half of that because you'd have to spend the other half to put it back in.
Presuming that we order us to start back up, we may not activate the LSN. We may simply treat the case as a large paper case.
Well, you have to get the documents from somewhere.
Well, yes, but the people, they still have copies of their own documents.
Okay. Any further? Okay, thanks very much. We'll hear from, I think, Nevada. Is that right?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Malsh?
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. And may it please the court, my name is Martin Malsh, and I'm appearing as proceeding on behalf of Intervenor State of Nevada. In my time, I'd like to emphasize two important points. One, what exactly it is that the commission did here and why, and two, what possibly could be done with $10 million. Now, let me address the first.
I got some ideas.
The first point, there are four unanimous commission and licensing board decisions that are the most important decisions here. All other decisions are either secondary or completely irrelevant. These are the May 20, 2011 decision by the licensing board suspending all deposition discovery in the proceeding, later affirmed by the commission on November 29, 2011. Then there is the commission decision of September 9, effectively directing a suspension of the proceeding, and a licensing board decision dated September 30, 2011, suspending the proceeding. The licensing board.
What was the authority for doing that? In the face of a statutory mandate to consider and reach a decision on a license application?
Well, the first decision that had any demonstrable effect on meeting the statutory deadline was the May 20 decision by the licensing board. Mm-hmm. On May 20, the licensing board was faced with the prospect that undue and unnecessary expenditures would need to be devoted to deposition discovery. Over 100 witnesses had been identified for deposition at the time. The licensing board, in response to a motion for a protective order, suspended deposition discovery, noting that common sense may counsel a careful allocation of resources, and then noting a number of things that are important. First of all, suspending deposition discovery was in accord with the desires of, apparent desires of the vast majority of the parties. Only Nye County was opposed to suspending depositions. It cited budgetary
uncertainty. I guess I'm asking a bigger picture question, sorry to interrupt, which is, given the statutory mandate to reach a decision, and given that DOE's motion to withdraw the license application had not been granted, what was the basis for shutting everything down when the statute required a continuing proceeding?
I would say there were two considerations here.
And there was still money available at that point to continue
Correct.
On.
I would say if you look through these four decisions, there are two considerations. I think, as the NRC argued in its brief, it's unreasonable to suppose that the three-year statutory deadline was still in effect. After all, Congress...
there had been a de facto suspension of the three-year...
That's what I would say, because the history of the 2012 appropriation statute...
But they're not sitting here today saying, just give us six more months. You know, they're saying, this is over.
Well, they're saying it's suspended. These four decisions never shut down the proceeding. The proceeding is still alive. It's suspended.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay. You had a second one you were going to say.
There's two major factors propelled the licensing board. One, I think it's fair to say that the three-year deadline was suspended and no longer in effect. If we assume that's the case, there remains in the statute a conceivable residual obligation to consider the application. But that obligation is conditioned in Section 114D by compliance with the laws.
No, shall issue a final decision approving or disapproving within 3 years.
Yes, but before
shall.
Then.
Shall.
Shall. But before then it says the Commission shall consider the application in accordance with the laws applicable to such applications, except that it shall decide. If you take the except that out and regard it as suspended for the time being, there remains the obligation to consider in accordance with the laws applicable to such applications. Those laws allow consideration of the factors which a licensing board considered, and they were most particularly the need to avoid imposing an undue and potentially unnecessary burden on the parties. In virtue of the fact that
unnecessary because
depositions would be very expensive. For example, at one time in the proceeding, when all the parties were proceeding diligently in an effort to meet the three-year deadline, as many as three depositions were scheduled to be conducted of experts per week. This was an immense and complicated proceeding. The upcoming burden to do deposition discovery was potentially large, and the board, licensing board, decided on May 20, 2011, later affirmed by the commission, that to go forward at that time would pose a undue and potentially unnecessary burden on all the parties. And that's important here because this isn't just about whether DOE should spend its remaining funds or NRC. There are 12 other parties in this case, including the state of Nevada.
I can interrupt for just 1 second. You started by saying that all the parties other than Nye County agreed?
The motion was filed by the Department of Energy. There were 14 parties.
Does that include Washington State, who's arguing here, and Aiken County? And they all agreed to this?
They did not. The only party that answered...
Just keep in mind, we're going to be asking them the same questions.
So. Yes, there were at the time. They were all parties. The individual petitioners here were never parties in this case. Uh-huh. They've always stayed away. The institutional petitioners were then parties, and of the institutional petitioners here, only one responded to the motion to suspend discovery, and that was Nye County. In terms of what could be done going forward, this is an immensely complicated proceeding. As the NRC held early in its notice of hearing, it is the most extensive most extensive proceeding in NRC history, and that's saying a lot. NRC has had over a quarter century of experience in very complicated, complex nuclear power plant licensing proceedings. The application alone is 8,600 pages, and that's just summary information. The actual meat and bones are in a million pages of supporting references. As I said, there are 14 parties. There are 288 issues outstanding. If the proceeding were to go forward, all these issues would need to be resolved in a on-the-record adjudication with examination and cross-examination of witnesses in an oral hearing, initial decisions, proposed findings, and the like.
I'm not understanding the thrust of what you're saying. You're saying it's very costly and very burdensome. And I agree completely. but from what follows, very costly and very burdensome, therefore the agency can disregard the statutory mandate? That doesn't follow, right?
It does not follow. But I think because it is very expensive and very burdensome, I think what does follow, if the mandate to proceed to meet a three-year deadline is temporarily suspended, mm-hmm. what follows is an obligation, arguably an obligation, to consider the application in accordance with the usual laws. Those usual laws allow consideration of avoiding undue burden and unnecessary expense and trying to make a decision going forward. What makes sense here? If this court ordered the proceeding to go forward.
A lot of that depends on prognostication to go back about what kind of funding stream will be available in the future.
Well, I wouldn't say it requires prognostications. If the agency were required to go forward, they would have to make a decision about allocation of current resources and decide basically what makes sense. Mm-hmm. I think we've heard today that the first thing the agency would probably do would be to reconstitute its licensing support network. In fact, the regulations require that. That network must be in place for the adjudicatory proceeding to proceed. If that takes $6 million, that leaves about 10. $4 million. For $4 million, you could maybe hold a few case management conferences, conduct maybe a couple of the 103 expert depositions, and then shut down. I don't think that's meaningful progress. I don't think that's useful.
Can you shut down for $4 million if it costs you $6 million to get it up?
It would
cost almost $10 million to shut down in the first place.
I'm sorry, to shut the proceeding down in the first place? I assume that meant close out contract expenses and the like. If the agency has $10 million and it would take $6 million to restart, or a substantial part of that, to restart the licensing support network, that leaves a few million dollars for the adjudicatory proceeding itself. The safety evaluation report is really not important. That's just the position of one of the 14 parties in the case. If the proceeding were to be revived and the licensing support network were to be revived, which would be necessary, then presumably the proceeding would pick up where it left off, which was beginning the depositions of 103 experts. You could do a few depositions, I suppose, but that would be it. At that point, it would shut down and await further guidance from Congress. That's the most
your position
do.
In this case, though, and understand my concern is that I think would be a shift of power from Congress to the executive, because it would allow the executive to disregard a mandate while there are funds still available to pursue that mandate, even though Congress had not yet said no funds may be expended. To pick up on what Judge Randolph said, oftentimes Congress say no funds may be expended on. They haven't done that here, right? And nor have they changed the mandate. And so that gives the executive a power to rule in your favor here, gives the executive a power that it has not previously had, and that is a shift in our system.
Judge Kavanaugh, I guess I don't see...
Unless you can tell me a good example of where something like this has happened previously, where a court has essentially blessed an agency's disregard of a statutory mandate, even though there was money left to pursue it.
I would not say, I guess the key question here is what remains of the mandate in Section 114B of the Nuclear Power
Right. Well, we know as a matter of text, it remains. And then as a matter of money, some remains, and there may or may not be more in the future. If it's zeroed out, then it's zeroed out. Or if there's a rider that says no funds may be expended, total defense. Or if they change the mandate, total defense.
That's true, but
none of those has happened yet, so I'm worried about the court's role in getting in the middle of this in a way that would alter that balance between Congress and the executive from what it's traditionally been. That's my concern.
I can see your concern, but I just don't think it applies here because I think the commission is faithfully following congressional directions. After all, Congress zeroed out the budget for NRC, notwithstanding being advised, and DOE, notwithstanding being advised that additional funds would be necessary to go on with the proceeding. I think it's a fair inference from what Congress did that...
Well, can't you also infer that the reason that Congress appropriated no money is because they got information indicating that the chairman was going to obstruct the process anyway? And because and one of the commissioners had recused himself and you had a deadlock, so why should Congress appropriate money when the commission is acting in defiance of the congressional mandate?
Well, I don't.
Well, isn't that that's a possible inference, isn't it? Do you have any information, any indication, any evidence that the inference that you propose is the correct one, as opposed to the one I just stated?
Well, I don't think there's any evidence in the appropriations record that was that supposedly improper action by the chairman was a motivating factor. What you do see in the record of the House Appropriations Committee report is that.
Well, they read the Inspector General's report, or at least had it available to them, didn't they?
Well, they may have, and that report has been the subject of very interesting and sometimes very partisan congressional hearings. The fact is that the actions by the chairman in arranging for the issuance of this October 6, 2010 memo had no clear effect on the progress of the adjudicatory proceeding. The first action or inaction by the commission that had the effect of delaying completion of the proceeding was the May 20, 2011 decision by the licensing board suspending discovery. Mm-hmm. As it turns out, it is not clear that the budget decision dealing with preparation of the safety evaluation report had any effect on the progress of the proceeding. It only affected the issuance of the safety evaluation report. There was no...
What action did... Do I remember correctly? Did the chairman take some action with respect to that report?
What happened was that in connection with 2010 and 2011 budget deliberations, the chairman, along with the executive director of the agency, issued a budget memo, directing the staff to begin closing down safety evaluation report activities.
Was it removing some findings?
I suppose it had that effect, but it had no effect on the pending adjudicatory proceeding, which is proceeding along on a separate track, and which was, in fact, not the SCR report. This proceeding was, in fact, the pacing item.
What was the purpose of that action with respect to the safety evaluation report?
It was to conserve resources in the face of uncertainty whether the proceeding could ever be completed. Mm.
I probably should have asked the NRC this question, but is there an element of shutting down that would be necessary at the end? That is, what would happen if the agency spent the $10 million, and then it happened that Congress did not, I don't know, even for 1 year or 2 years, provide any money at all? Is there something that has to be done to save the documents, to save the computers, or can they just sort of sit there, or what? Is there an expense of repacking that's required in order to make it possible for the petitioners to move on later if there is money later, if there's a hiatus in money?
There would be some expense associated with repacking. There are, I'm going to say, 10 million documents that have been produced in discovery and were at one time on the licensing support network. The network is no longer operational, but those same documents have been preserved on CD, so they are available, although they may be somewhat difficult to search. There is knowledge capture in the form of the so-called technical evaluation reports, and they capture all of the progress of the staff up until around September 2011. If the proceeding were to be restarted, and money were then spent to reconstitute the licensing support network, and then the proceeding were to end, the network would go down again, and I suppose there would be a large expenditure, millions of dollars, to bring it back up again, if that were to be necessary. There would be some additional expenditures to capture additional documents produced and depositions produced and the like. I suspect that would be relatively modest. Of course, the NRC still has hearing rooms. Just the fact that the Las Vegas hearing room was shut down is not terribly important. It has hearing rooms.
Do you have any idea how much the Department of Energy and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission have spent to date on considering Yucca Mountain? And we've had cases going back into, I think, the 90s dealing with this. But do you have any idea how much?
I'm going to say that so far the total appropriations from the waste fund for Yucca activities have been on the order of $6 billion, most of that going to the Department of Energy.
$6 billion?
$6 billion. The going forward costs in terms of completing the proceeding, constructing the repository, and so forth are, I think, on the order of another $50 billion. So we are, you know, a third of the way through if the project were ever to go forward. The licensing proceeding at one point was on a track in which one might expect, using best efforts by everybody, and this is really knocking themselves out, to make a decision about 54 months after docketing of the license application. That itself was very expensive. At its peak, when everyone was basically knocking themselves out to meet the deadline, the NRC was spending on the order of $2 to $3 million a month, and DOE was spending on the order of $16 million per month. You can see that from fiscal year 10 appropriations levels. We were spending somewhat less, but it was an immensely burdensome and complex proceeding. And if it were to be restarted, all those burdens and complexity would once again come to the fore. And I frankly think if this court were to ask the NRC to resume the proceeding, the reality is that very little useful progress could be made.
Hearing no further questions.
Thank you.
I'm sure he was out of time, right? We'll give you a few more minutes, and the judges have questions. We'll keep it for more than a few minutes.
Thank you. I appreciate having a little more time. Your Honors, my colleague from Nevada described the state of affairs at the start of 2010 when this proceeding was functional. It reflects a functioning proceeding. May not have been funded at the level that the NRC would have ideally liked, but it was moving along. Today, we have no proceeding whatsoever. We have no activity with the NRC reviewing the application. That is 100% attributable to the NRC's own actions. Counsel for the NRC posited that it was not appropriate to spend good money after bad. We would posit that it is not the prerogative of the NRC to make that call. Congress has put a mandate in law. Congress funded the proceeding at a level allowing it moving forward, but for the one time after it was already shut down, from which no legal inference can be taken, and we could argue as a practical matter, a contrary inference could be taken from that argued by respondents.
Was the $10 million enough to? You're talking about before that year, before FY?
I'm sorry, yes, I am.
I got it, okay.
I'm speaking at the time that the shutdown occurred, FY 2010, they were funded at a $29 million level, and continuing resolutions continued that funding level clear past the October 4th decision to shut down to April 2011 through CRs.
Can I just ask, can you answer the question that surprised me, which is it correct that you didn't object to the protective order?
Your Honor, the state of Washington did not take a position with respect to that motion. Nye County, which is also a petitioner here, did object.
But isn't that not taking a position? That's the same thing as not opposing it. I mean, if they say they want to suspend discovery and you don't say anything.
There are two things I'd like to say about that. First, the context is that in March of 2011, rather, we had had oral argument on the Aiken 1 case, and we were waiting to see what would come of that case.
But you still wanted to proceed. I mean, how can, if you actually wanted to proceed, I understand that you do want the proceeding, so I'm not doubting this, but this does suggest that everybody understands there's some level of reality going on here, and that maybe it isn't the best thing to proceed under those circumstances. Otherwise, I'm not sure why the fact that there was a pending court case here makes any difference in terms of the discovery. Why not just keep going?
Well,
Nye County objected, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And Nye County stands up just equally with the state of Washington in terms of...
I'm not asking this as a standing question. I'm asking because I understand any one petitioner can raise the standing issue, but if you and South Carolina and the others that really have a strong interest here, I appreciate Nye has an interest also, but if you are willing to not let the discovery not proceed, that must have mean some kind of realization that things didn't, in your view, something could be suspended even if the statute required it not to be suspended.
So two other pieces of background, Your Honor. First,
Before you get to the two other pieces, that you mentioned that the case was pending in this court at that time, and the case was about whether DOE could withdraw the application. If you lost that case, and we had held that DOE could withdraw the application, then any discovery that took place while the case was pending would be a total waste of time.
That's absolutely a way to look at it, Your Honor.
Did you think it likely you were going to lose that case?
Pardon me?
Well, in the same way you were asked, Judge Kavanaugh asked, is it likely there's not going to be any money? I'll ask you the same question. Is it you thought likely you were going to lose that case? And if not, why didn't you go forward?
This gets to the two pieces. First of all, we felt that we should win that case.
Of course.
I certainly accept the court's ruling. The two pieces are, number one.
Should, you said. It's different than likely.
Number one, we were admitted to the proceeding based on contentions. And this is it's an arcane system in front of the NRC. But your participation in the proceeding is based on what contentions you've put forward. Our contentions, coming in as interveners, were solely related to DOE's motion to withdraw. So the discovery that was going to move forward was not going to involve us directly.
Was that true for everybody other than Nye County?
That is the case, yes.
Well, that explains it. That's a lot easier answer than the others.
Thank you.
What happens if $10 million actually is the end? That is, what if NRC in the next year doesn't get it? What if we order to proceed until the money runs dry? Do you really want the proceeding to go till the money runs dry, even if you predict that in some future year the money will come back? Do you not want any amount of money to be saved for repacking, putting the stuff in cold storage, or whatever it is you do to things in this kind of litigation? Or do you really want, if we issued a mandamus that said, continue until the money runs dry, is that what you want?
Your Honor, counsel for respondents suggested that I think the figure was $6 million would need to go into reconstituting the LSN. Mm-hmm. Although the LSN is mandated by the NRC's rules, the LSN is not necessary for a proceeding to go forward. It would have allowed it to go forward most efficiently, but spending $6 million on the LSN may not be the best use of money. We believe that for almost no cost, there are prepared safety evaluation reports ready to go that could be issued. Your Honor, the fact that those reports were ready to go in 2010...
I'm going to ask about this now that you raised it, but that's not really the question. The question still is, they're ready to go. You don't think with $10 million they can resolve this entire matter, do you?
I would concede that $10 million will not be enough.
So at the end of $10 million, we're somewhere along the way, but not all the way, right?
Correct.
Do you want them to spend all of it on moving forward and none of it on preserving anything up until a certain time?
Your Honor, I'm going to accept what they've represented to the court, which is they've already done the job of preserving information. I believe that the NRC at this point can make decisions with the funding available to direct those resources where they can provide the most bang for the buck in advancing the NRC's consideration of the application.
Well, just to give a hypothetical that's very familiar to me. Say you're taking a law school exam, you got the blue book out, you got your pencils going, time runs out. Now, do you want to, and you've got like one more sentence to go, time runs out, and you just have to drop your pencil. And everybody walks away, and all the blue books are just left there for the next year. You want that, or do you want the blue books to be filed somewhere? That is, you want something to be done with all of the progress that you've made over that period, or is it, maybe it's possible you can just drop everything and pick it up again 2 years later if 2 years later is when the money comes. Is it? Is
I think
possible?
Your Honor might have been describing my corporation.
Mine too, actually.
Your Honor, I am only speculating because obviously I can't get into the inner workings of the NRC. It seems to me reasonable to expect that the NRC can devise a way to move forward, issue the safety evaluation reports, have the parties commence with discovery, and advance at least the state as far as it can with the funds available, just as its guidance suggests it needs to do in anticipation of full funding in the future.
And you don't want us, or do you, to evaluate what the best way forward is?
Your Honor, I think that this court's role is to mandate compliance with the law. I think once the court gets to that line, the decisions on how to comply with the law rest with the NRC. We're getting into agency discretion then.
Let me ask just one more question, plenty of time for my colleagues to ask. With respect to cases like Barr and United Mine Workers, where we did not issue mandamus, and one of the reasons we said was that there are agency priorities, I suppose you could have eliminated agency priorities by just requiring the agencies to follow every one of their mandates to the end, right? Not to be able to prioritize, but they just have to follow every mandate to the end. And so that whether they have one priority or 10, Congress has told them these are all things that they must do, and so they should be compelled to do them. Why is this different than that?
It's different because this mandate is different. I'll make 2 points. Number one, this mandate is different than the case in Barr, where you had similar timelines in which to act for any number of applicants for FDA approval. We have here a process in which the country has already, and the figure I've heard, is invested more than $10 billion. We have a process that Congress mandated a unique statute to be followed to get to a decision. And we have a case where the NRC has not identified to this court a single competing priority that would be affected by compliance with the statute. And that's why we're here today, Your Honors. I heard the representation that this proceeding was still alive. It's similar to what we heard in Aiken 1, where we'd been told as a matter of standing that we'd already won. There was nothing for the court to decide. As one of my colleagues said, we can't take any more of these victories.
I mentioned at the beginning that the Department of Energy is not here, which is obvious. And two questions. One, does the $10 million is just NRC's appropriation,
right?
The Department of Energy, for all we know, has nothing.
Your Honor, I'd submit that we can't read anything into the fact that there is no information before the court. I would not concede that the Department of Energy has nothing.
Well, I don't know. I mean, has Congress appropriated anything out of the waste fund for the Department of Energy?
Just as the NRC has carryover funds, and this is speculation on my part. I don't have information to base it on.
Okay.
I'm speculating that the Department of Energy has carryover funds.
The Department of Energy, the second point is not very enthusiastic about going forward here. I mean, they're an executive agency under the direction of the president, and as Judge Kavanaugh pointed out, and serve at the president's pleasure, and the president doesn't want this proceeding to go forward, and it was a campaign promise. But be that as it may, there are 277 objections pending. And the burden is on the Department of Energy to satisfy the commission on each one of them. What's the answer to that?
I can point to the fact that, and I was present for this at oral argument in front of the board, the Department of Energy represented that if denial withdrawal were denied, it would be prepared to move forward. The ASLB reflected that in the ASLB's decision, the board's order.
Okay.
Secondly, the department represented to this court in Aiken 1 oral argument last year that it would move forward. And most recently, Secretary Chu represented to Congress that DOE would move forward if directed.
Does it depend on them having money, or doesn't depend on them having money?
I don't recall that Secretary Chu, taking the most recent representation, was stated in terms of money. Again, I don't have direct knowledge. I'm sorry.
But in the end, it depends on whether, I appreciate we don't know whether they have money, but in the end, it depends on whether they do have money, right?
I'd agree with that.
Did he say? When was his testimony?
Your Honor, that's what we submitted in our 28J letter, okay, which was, okay, I believe, within
but,
the last
did he
month.
Say, that, I have not read it, but did he say that the budgetary constraints would prevent him or prevent the department from defending in the if a proceeding began again?
To the best of my recollection, he made no statement in that regard.
He actually said he would go forward if he were ordered to go forward, right?
I believe that is. I don't have the precise words in front of me, but I think that's accurate. Something yeah. close to that.
And he's not here, so we can't order him to go forward.
He's not before the court, but I would submit that it would be the NRC's a matter for the board to direct the Department of Energy to proceed.
Really? Does the board have the power to order them to go forward, or just to declare that they've defaulted and they haven't proven their case?
The board has the authority through its case management orders to order the parties as to how they conduct discovery and how they conduct their case. If it comes to a matter of legal sanctioning, I am not going to suggest, and this is getting far out of my comfort zone in terms of being grounded in the law, but I'm not going to suggest that the NRC's board has the authority to sanction a sister federal agency.
Well, for example, in the area that I do know something about, which would be litigation in the district court, if a plaintiff doesn't continue its prosecution, cases dismissed for lack of prosecution, can't force a petitioner to continue.
I think
now, maybe we can, because we can mandamus them based on the kind of statute you're talking about here, but I don't know of anything that would suggest the NRC can force them to continue.
The NRC may not be able to force them to continue, but...
maybe we have something now.
Thank you for my colleague. He provided the direct words of Secretary Chu, which were that DOE, quote, will abide. Your Honors, we believe that the department, this NRC proceeding is different from the normal NRC proceeding in which you have a voluntary applicant. That's part of the rationale for the board to deny withdrawal. We believe that the Department of Energy has its own mandate to participate with NRC in moving forward in the licensing process. So we haven't crossed the bridge of DOE not complying. If we do get to that bridge and DOE fails to comply, we would reserve the right to come before this court again and argue that there's a mandatory duty.
Question? All right, very well argued on both sides. Very interesting case, and we appreciate the submissions of both sides. We'll take it under submission.